He's got the knowledge.
Because once again, I have to come on air and talk about how right I am once again. In anything that it comes to sports.
He's got the questions.
I'm going to lose it. Are you kidding me? What are we doing here?
He's got the guests.
20th head coach in Fresno State history here, Matt. Is it hard to believe sometimes still the 20th head coach here in program history?
It's all moved really quickly here over the course of the last 5-6 weeks. But super excited to be here.
Phil Bonatti is the voice for the Central Valley sports leader. Behind the Bench starts now. Brought to you by Helena Agri.
That's right, Behind the Bench here on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader, here live on a Tuesday. Happy Tuesday, everyone who is here listening on 1430 ESPN, listening on the 1430 ESPN app, listening on 1430ESPNFresno.com, the website where you can listen to us as all of our shows live and on demand here on the platform of networks that we have. We're also live on YouTube. What up, YouTube audience? As we have our show live streaming video-wise here on 1430 ESPN. We also have it on Facebook and Twitch as well. So good to have you, the streaming audience, here on 1430 ESPN. Good to be here for another edition. It is 3:03 right here on the dot. It is July 29th on this wonderful Tuesday. Hope you're doing well. Hope you're enjoying yourself as you get ready to finish up your day, finish up your workday. If you're listening here on 1430 ESPN, thanks for letting us be a part of your afternoon, get you set up for the evening of sports. Good show for you today. 2 hours of programming we will offer for you today before we take you up to Giants pregame at 6:15. Sponsors to get to, of course, we have the Lee's Air Hotline. 559-320-1430 is the way to reach us on the Lee's Air Hotline. Like I said, 559-320-1430, the way to reach us here for the show. If you want to call in, be a part of the conversation, that is the way you reach us on the program. We also have our weather check sponsored by Lee's Air Plumbing and Heating and Roofing. It's 95 degrees today, getting up to 96 potentially. We're going to be hovering around those high 90s for quite a bit the next few days, so hang in there. It's going to be pretty much the same for the most part. It's summer. It's Fresno. It's the Central Valley. This is what you sign up for when you live here. So anyways, there you go. 96 on the docket for today. We also have our 3 o'clock sponsor, the Clovis Truck Center, brought to you by the 3 o'clock hour, brought to you by Clovis Truck Center, formerly known as Linex Clovis. They're the first, the biggest, and still the best in the Central Valley. And now they are bigger than the Bedliner. Clovis Truck Center, just a couple days left before you will miss out on the opportunity to save $50 over at Clovis Truck Center. That's right. If you go visit Clovis Truck Center, tell them Phil Bonatti sent you, then you will get $50 off your visit over there. Clovis Truck Center is found just south of the Clovis Rodeo Grounds in Old Town Clovis. Be sure to visit my friends over at Clovis Truck Center today. Want to give a special shout out to some sponsors that are going to be part of our NFL training camp experience tomorrow. That's right. We are heading over to NFL training camp for the Los Angeles Rams tomorrow. We're actually, the reason why we're only 2 hours today is because we are leaving earlier. We're killing the 5 o'clock hour. We're heading on our way down to LA to make sure we make that trip possible. But we are wanting to thank our sponsors who are allowing this to happen: FFB Bank, Clovis Truck Center, Thiessen Duker, KFC, and Banyan Tree and Grizzly Pharmacy. So those are the folks that are helping us make things happen over there for our LA Rams trip. We'll be there tomorrow, and we are going to have a live edition of Behind the Bench tomorrow. Special edition of Behind the Bench tomorrow following the Giants game. That's right. Giants are going to start us off in the afternoon, 12:45, first pitch, live from San Francisco. And then after that, at around 4 p.m., yours truly will have Rams training camp live on location from Loyola Marymount with all kinds of interviews and exclusive coverage from yours truly here for another edition of Behind the Bench. Should be a lot of fun. It's going to be a whirlwind couple of days, but we're excited to be heading down there, and we'll be talking about that momentarily. What do we got on the show today? Well, we got a lot to talk about on the show today. We've got a couple of guests coming on the show for the two-hour program. Coming up in about 10 minutes, we'll have Fresno State men's golf coach Chad Spencer in to talk about the golf season coming up. Get a chance to meet with him and talk about what's exciting about Fresno State golf this year on the men's side. Also, in the second hour, we will have KMPH's Gabe Camarillo, who Fresno State camp today, but we'll discuss what we have learned from the first few days of Fresno State camp and where the interest is as far as the football season is concerned and how things are shaping up for this roster that is set to play at Kansas in a little over 3 weeks, a little over 4 weeks from today. So we're looking forward to it, looking forward to all of that. We're going to do our 50 State and 50 Days trivia today. We will discuss the Rams. We'll discuss all the different things coming up. But first, we have to start off with the topic of the day. And it was fascinating walking into the office this morning because we had a lot to discuss as far as the sport world is concerned. First thing I do, of course, is I sit down at my desk. I get ready for the day. And usually Jorge's right around the same time as me, and Jorge did shuffle in right at the same time as I did, basically, and sat at the desk. I utter maybe two words out of my mouth to Jorge. I'm like, man, the Giants, something like that. And Jorge is singing a different tune today, although it takes a whole afternoon maybe to change things up. But Jorge, I believe from my experience this morning that you have lost the faith of the Giants after one day, after their loss 6-5. You had a rough reaction to it this morning. Are you still feeling the sentiment, or have you calmed down from your outrage this morning?
Nah, who said that? Nah. I don't know what you're talking about. I'm still with it. I'm still proud of the team.
Are you really?
Sure. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Okay.
I'm still with it.
Giants lose 6-5 to Pittsburgh last night. Carson was not sharp in his start, and Giants pitchers mostly were not sharp in the game last night, and the Giants are on a lifeline, losing to the team that has one of the worst records in baseball when it comes to playing on the road.
You keep saying that like it's a thing. Like,
it's not a thing. It's literally facts.
You can't.
It's literally facts.
You're just saying things.
Statistically, the Pirates are the worst team on the road. It's like there's no other disputing anything in that sense of it.
Like stats have to do something with baseball. Come on. Come on.
You want to hear another stat? Giants are 13-22.
You're going to tell me anyway, so go ahead. Yeah.
Giants are 13-22 since the Rafael Devers trade. Do you know how many teams in baseball that have a worse record since that day the Giants have made that trade?
I don't know why you keep saying this thing. It's like,
come on, there's got
to
be a
trying
few,
to hurt me for real.
There's got to be a few teams that have played worse baseball.
I thought you were my friend.
There's got to be a few teams that played worse baseball than the Giants have since the Devers trade about a month and a half ago, right? Surely there has to be one.
This is unnecessary. Unnecessary, I'm telling you. People don't care about this.
Uh-huh. And that's why they listen every day to this Giants team playing to find a way.
In reality, I'm starting to get frustrated more than.
Before I let you cook, the answer is zero teams have played worse baseball than the Giants have since the Rafael Devers trade.
Okay.
That's the statistic you're looking for. Anyways, go ahead. Go on your diatribe.
I'm just frustrated because it wasn't a game that got out of hand. It wasn't a game that they were playing bad. They just can't score runs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the problem.
132 runs scored since the Devers trade. You know how many teams have scored more runs than that? Every single one of them. Every single team has scored more runs than that since the Giants made that trade for Devers. Brutal. Brutal
it's like
stuff.
They expect the Devers to be the answer to the problem, but they never. I don't know.
Julia, you're here. And I don't know how much you consumed Giants baseball last night. And are you sharing the same sense of frustration with this thing? But last night, another frustrating loss. The Giants are one win above 500. And I would have been shocked to tell you this if, based off the start that they had, they'd be only one game above 500 and not even by August. What are your thoughts from last night's game?
Yeah, I'm extremely frustrated at this point. I feel like it's, at this point, solely our offense. They left 12 runners on base last night, which is crazy. I mean, they had bases loaded, like, at least two or three times. And I'm not even mad about Wisenhunt's start. I feel like he did fine.
Yeah, he did well.
Yeah.
He did well.
Someone showed me a stat line on Lincecum's first start, and it was, like, 5 earned runs and, like, 4.5 innings. And I'm like, I get it. So it's not – it's nothing to blame Wisenhunt for. It's an impossible position to put yourself in as a player to try to have a debut where you're trying to save a team's season. That's tough, you know?
Yeah, I'm not mad at his performance at all. I'm mad at our entire offense for not being able to score runs and leaving runners on base constantly and not backing up this young pitcher who's coming out and trying to save us.
Do we know what the Giants' hitting was for runners in scoring position last night? Do I have that statistic in front of me? I wonder if I can find that real quick. Because a reminder, folks, that over the weekend when they played the Mets, the Giants were 0-23 with runners in scoring position. I don't know if I'll have a statistic in front of me that tells me if they're going to play a lot better than that. I don't have a specific runners in scoring position stat for you as far as that's concerned. I imagine it had to have been a little bit better. I'm wondering if MLB has a box score of some sort of that. But that's part of the issue, of course, in that sense. And things are frustrating for this Giants team who is trying to find a reason why they should buy at the deadline. I think it's as maddening as anybody's understanding of this team is that the talent is certainly there for this team. Giants, by the way, last night, 4-13 with runners in scoring position. So improvement, but you're giving up 6 runs to one of the worst offenses in baseball, and you can't find the big hits when you need them. And the Giants are continuing to slump and shrink in moments that are absolutely moments that they need to have. And where are the moves for this Giants team moving forward? Where do you have to go from here? Is it certainly talking about are we selling at this point? I don't know if selling is the right way. Is there a starter that they can go after? Does that give you an all-in feel? You know, the all-in move I've been thinking about for the last few days, and I've been settling on this, is I think they absolutely should go for Stephen Kwan of the Cleveland Guardians. I think that is the name that has been rattling in my head over and over again. Get Elliot Ramos out of left field. I think Elliot Ramos needs to play a little more DH. I think he needs to settle down. He's been a little bit of a head case the last few weeks. Get Devers to play a little more first. Get Dom Smith in the rotation. Get a rotation of Wilmer and Elliot on the DH side of things. I think Stephen Kwan, who makes contact, raises pitch counts for players, pitchers specifically, can frustrate the opposing team. I think he's the perfect Giant. He's from he's from the Bay Area. And I feel like that's the all-in move in my mind that would change my tenor of this team because he would provide what I think Jung-Hoo Lee was providing in April, which was contact, high rate of contact, lack of swing and miss, putting the ball in play, especially in positions where they were productive outs. The Giants need productive outs, and they aren't even getting those, and so that's the frustrating part about it. I've sung this tune many, many times over this airwave, so I don't need to go into it more, but that just feels like where it's got to be. It's a high contact team that needs high contact at the plate, and the inability to strike out in big opportunity moments or hit pop-ups in big opportunity moments like last night, especially in that ninth inning when they were trying to find a way to come back. Yeah, that's where it is. Giants, frustrating. They could lose tonight and be at 500. I wouldn't have believed it in April if that was where we were going to be. And here we are staring at it right in the face and 4 games out of a playoff spot. How incredibly different the season feels from even a month and a half ago. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we're bringing in our first guest of the day, Chad Spencer, Fresno State Men's Golf, coming in next on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader. Ooga, chaka, ooga.
Girl, you just don't realize what you do to me. When you hold me in your arms so tight, you let me know everything's all right.
All right, welcome back to Behind the Bench here on 1430 ESPN Fresno. Here on a Tuesday, hope everyone's doing well, listening to your Central Valley sports leader. And have our first guest of the day here live in studio, Chad Spencer, Fresno State men's golf coach here. You were telling me right before we came on, 13th year at the helm. Hard to believe for you. Good to have you here on a Tuesday. How does it feel, 13 years when you're here?
Oh, it's wonderful. This is home for me. I went to school at Fresno State. This is a wonderful town and wonderful sports town. Obviously a close-knit golf community, so... love Fresno, and you know, it's just breezed by. It's hard to believe it's been 12 full years.
Absolutely, and it's good to have you here leading the golf program, and an exciting time, obviously, to be in the sport of golf, I got to imagine, especially with a weekend where golf's a little more highlighted with the Happy Gilmore movie. Did you get a chance to catch that?
I did. You know, I was 13 when the first movie came out. It's a legendary movie as far as golf goes. I was a little disappointed with the plot, but there was no plot anyway.
No.
It was great seeing all the cameos. You had every golf sports star in there.
Yeah.
So it was cool. Just the local guy DeChambeau, Scheffler, they're making fun of him getting arrested. I mean, there were a lot of great parts. It was a fun movie.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a lot of fun. And you would say the golf realism, maybe not so much, but
correct.
To make it happen. Nobody's, I'm not going to spoil the movie. It's interesting, though. Go watch it. Anyways, Coach, it's exciting to have you here and talking about, you know, going into another season, right? Because for those who don't know, golf is pretty year-round as far as the competition is concerned. There's no real off season per se,
right.
Especially when you're golfing here in the state of California, on the West Coast. You know, what is life like as a coach, especially for a group that competes pretty much on the regular?
Yeah, I mean, we start here when school starts August 20th. It will be our first practice day. We'll be on a plane up to Washington State September 7th. It is nonstop until about Halloween. Mm-hmm. We get a little break around Thanksgiving and Christmas. But then it's right back to it in January, and we go till May. And then the guys, they've got their own schedule, full summer schedule. So they're going to be ready, you know, coming in here in the next few weeks. Looking forward to coaching them up a little bit and getting them ready to get on the plane there up to Washington.
Absolutely. Very exciting stuff. And especially this team, you know, who's been very competitive over the last few years, obviously. It's going to be interesting. Last year, the Mountain West for everybody here in the sports of Fresno State, and it's going to be a transition. But, you know, when it comes to this team and the makeup of it, you know, obviously you're going to be replacing a few guys who are graduated, right, and going into this year. So what is the makeup of the team going into this year?
Yeah,
what does it look like?
We're really young, first and foremost. We're kind of led by Jaden Hunter and Jake Betancourt, our lone seniors. James Watney is going to be a really good junior for us this year. I really think he's maturing, coming into his own. He's had some really nice results this summer. We've also gotten a couple of transfers that I really think are going to impact the lineup, Zach Tarter and Vaughn Wasson. And then we've got a couple of nice freshmen coming in, one from Phoenix, Nash Arthurs. He's a wonderful player. So, the future is bright for us. And I think we're going to continue to get better. I think last year was a little bit of a disappointment coming off of our regional year going to NCAAs. But, you live and you learn, and I hope that we'll be a little bit more consistent this season.
Is there any lessons learned from the 2 years ago to that year, last year of the way guys approach things? I know it's so interesting how the tournaments can kind of be one or another. Golfers, obviously, it's one week into another. It's a round-by-round kind of basis on it. How do you bottle up what you need to what you learn from these things as opposed to just stay the course,
right,
do what we do, and this is what Fresno State's
about? Golf is a mentality. If you have the right amount of discipline and focus, you can really stay in your game for long periods of time, as we've seen with Scotty Scheffler and some of the best players in the world.
Yeah.
When we went to regionals, we had two anchors, Matthew Sutherland and Matthew Manganiello. When you lose a couple guys like that, you lose some leadership, you lose some direction for the team. So I hope we learned from that last season. Mm-hmm. And now we've got a couple of veteran guys that I think are going to lead the way for us and really kind of show the young guys and the guys that are coming in as transfers the way to go. We've got the schedule. If we can compete like kind of we always do, we should be right in the mix towards the end of the year.
You mentioned the change right to the roster. And for guys who maybe are those anchor points of a roster and suddenly those guys leave and there's guys on the roster who necessarily were those anchor points on a roster and anchor point on a team, and now they have to be in that role. Right. How do you train them into that spot?
Yeah, I mean, golf is such an individual sport. What we want is guys to lead by example. You know, we want guys to go out and practice hard, work hard. That's what our guys are going to see. Oh, well, gosh, he's really good at that. What does he do to make himself so good in that area? That's what, in my mind, leads by example. I mean, I got to play 3 years of college golf with Nick Watney when I was here, and just watching him, I just got better by watching him.
Yeah.
That was a huge help. Now, obviously, Coach Watney was a wonderful coach for me. I learned a lot from him. But, man, when you have a player like that on your team, leading by example, that was a huge thing for me.
Just kind of, it's like pace in a race, right? It's just like the pace guy, and everybody kind of follows along in that way, and it just keeps people moving in that formation, right?
Yeah, it's the recipe, right? We're all looking for the right recipe, what works well for us to improve certain parts of our game. Golf, there's a lot of different ways to skin the cat, so to speak.
Yeah.
So, you got to find what works for you and what your process is and go from there.
Absolutely. So this team's exciting to see and what they're going to be doing. Obviously, so you're going to be going to Washington here in a little over a month from now, taking on that tournament up there. And then obviously things are rapidly approaching. What is the process of getting ready in a season like that? Getting guys into because they're obviously playing, right? And they're very busy in the summer. So is there any change you bring into this when they arrive on campus?
The change when we come in, because we've got to hit the ground running. You know, we've got to be ready within about 2.5 weeks of when we start practice.
Yeah.
So really we just want to compete more. We want to put them up against each other. We want to qualify for these events and make them earn it. And I think that, you know, putting their feet to the fire in competition is what gets them ready. I think for the most part, they are going to be ready because they have been playing high-level amateur golf this summer. That's what gets you prepared is that competition.
Do you feel it coming out of the summer from these guys? Do you feel like they come off the summer a little bit like
jacked excited, up,
ready to
yes.
go? Yeah.
I mean, we call it Christmas Day, the first day of school, because we hand out all of our goodies.
Yeah.
You know, shoes and apparel and belts and anything, you know, you can think of, they're going to get that day. So they're already kind of pumped up for that kind of stuff. But, it's just exciting starting new, right, into a new season, and we're looking forward to it.
What are those practices like, those first few? You know, is it the guys trying to show what they've changed or show what they've worked on? Or what is it like? Is it a little peacocking a little bit sometimes at the practices to start?
I don't think so. I hope that they're showing everyone how much they've improved over the break. To me, that would be peacocking, right?
Yeah.
Is to beat them in competition. Not only do we compete on the golf course when we're qualifying for tournaments, but we're competing in practice every day.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just like any other sport, we're going to have competitions.
Yeah.
And that's what matters in this game. Can you beat people? Everyone can sit on the driving range and hit a good 8-iron.
Yeah.
But can you do it when it matters? That's what we want.
Absolutely. I'm fascinated about the world of college golf lately, right? Because I feel like there's been more attention to it. A lot of people are picking this path, you know, seeing where it kind of goes as far as this. What has been different about college golf, even since I know COVID was a different matter in it, but since then, in this last 5 years, what does college golf look like from your perspective?
Well, for one, I mean, it's become exponentially popular since COVID.
Yeah.
The game is as popular as it's ever been. We have more kids, more athletes playing golf. I feel like we're recruiting a higher level golfer than we ever have, which hopefully will continue.
Yeah.
It's just an exciting time for golf. I just love the game watching week to week on tour. I even watched last week the 3M. I mean, who's watching the 3M right now?
Hey, you know.
Because the major season's over. People aren't as excited. But, you know, there are so many good up-and-coming players. You know, I even keep tabs on the Americas Tour because we've got a couple of alums, Alex Lee and Matthew Manganiello, to name a couple that are out there that we're trying to root on to go up the ladder to the PGA Tour.
Yeah.
So it's just a good time. And I think a lot of the sports are like that right now.
Yeah, the popularity for sure, obviously. And it just seems like there's more attention to it, especially more access to watching what these kids can be capable of and what they're doing. You know, do you feel like if you golfed in this era, do you feel like things would be different a little bit as an athlete when you were growing up and competing back when you were younger? Or do you feel like this era of golf is a little bit different?
It's way better.
Yeah.
The depth, the parity in the fields are insane.
Yeah.
You know, when I played here, I was a 72.2 to 72.9 stroke average. So that would barely make our team now. And I played number one or two. Now this was 20 plus years ago.
Yeah.
It's just a different game now. Everybody hits it 300 plus yards. Mm-hmm. Everyone has pretty good hands. You know, what I'm helping our guys with, get the ball in the hole and let's pick a good process, a good mental process out on the golf course. These guys' golf swings are as good as, I mean, their access to technology, their access to TrackMans, their access to YouTube. I mean, even YouTube golf, you can digest this stuff 24/7 now.
Yeah.
You know, there's no lack of that. So,
yeah.
You know, guys are coming in more prepared than they ever have.
It's fascinating, right? The evolution of the golfer and the way the access to the technology, obviously, you mentioned, the equipment, the ability to really bomb these things as far as, you know, down the fairway. So when you know that the talent is there and everybody's kind of working on all of that, I imagine your role as a coach is the strategy part. Know when to attack, know when to pick your spots, know when to know when you can make the shot you can make and when you can't. And how much is that a battle for you as a coach?
It's everything.
Yeah.
I think the theme for our season is going to be maturity. Who can be the mature golfer out there and play golf the right way?
Yeah.
You know, it's not always pedal to the metal, bomb and gouge the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
We need to pick our spots. We need to pick a good angle. We need to make sure that we're not short-sighting ourselves. Just the basics of the game so that it's easier. Yeah. I can get the ball up and down. I'm not three-putting. Eliminating bogeys is what we're trying to do. These guys make a ton of birdies.
Yeah.
So can we eliminate the mistakes?
Well, you mentioned it, right? When you're watching all these tour events, and obviously the guy who's doing it all right now is Scotty, and Scotty's the guy who makes pars. It's what keeps him in tournaments. It's not sexy, you know. Certainly, it's not eagles and whatever that's happening right there. But the par keeps you in the game, and you just steady Eddie it through these tournaments. Is it hard to teach young golfers like that to see that?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's maturity. You know, the only way to learn is to live through it.
Yeah.
And then the next go around, hopefully we're going to be better. We understand what's going on so we can take care of that. I mean, Scotty is number one in the world because he's number one at bogey avoidance.
Yeah.
He doesn't make bogeys. Yes, he makes a lot of birdies, but the putting, like that's why he's won the last two majors.
Mm-hmm.
He's putting finally. Yeah. Look at how scary it is when he makes a few putts.
And the bogey bounce back too. Even when he does, it's the bogey bounce back too. You know, when you see the guys react to a bogey or anything like that, how much is that the coaching part of it for you? Is taking that moment to get them to a different headspace? Because I feel like when you come off a bogey, that's the most important time as a golfer to really reset and figure
things out. We call it carryover.
Yeah.
When guys get a little grumpy, a little pissy out there, we call that carryover, and sometimes it carries over into another shot, which then, boom, I might make another bogey or worse. So we're focusing on, get a little upset about the shot, but let's learn about it and then get over it so that we're back in our process so that, hey, that next shot, we're good to go, and we're not worried about what happened 20 minutes ago.
Chad Spencer here, Fresno State men's golf coach here with me on 1430. I got to ask, you know, just I want to take it back a little bit because you were a player, right, at Fresno State. And when did you feel like coaching was the thing for you? Did you know it as a player? Did you kind of how did you know this was going to be your path?
So after my fourth year at Fresno State, I had about a semester to go with school. And I asked Coach Watney at the time, I said, hey, coach, would you mind if I kind of tagged along and helped you out a little bit and see what this coaching thing's all about.
Yeah.
He got me interested in it. I played a couple of years on the Canadian tour. So, you know, didn't love it. got my face kicked in pretty good up there. I was actually training to become a fireman after that. This was in 07, 08 when the housing crash happened.
Wow.
Therefore, we're going to nix all the hiring right when I was near the Chiefs' final interview.
Oh, man.
Okay? So I was like, geez, what am I going to do now? Go online, find a coaching job at UNR. Yeah. So I started with the Nemesis at Nevada. So I was there for 5 years. I love the aspect of seeing these guys come in as young men and leaving as men.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, is our number one priority as coaches is give them a heck of an experience, graduate the player, and then let's see them grow up and mature through that process. That to me, is the most rewarding process. And I hope we're not going to lose it with NIL and other things. That it makes me a little bit nervous. But yeah. I think if I do my job, that's what my intention will be forever.
Absolutely. Your time at UNR, I mean, how much do you credit to where you are now from that experience? Even though you say you coached for the enemy, you know, but luckily you found home, right? But you obviously have to credit that time, right, that where it formed you. What was like the biggest thing that kind of turned, you know, obviously made you realize, you know, what was the knack for you as far as coaching is concerned?
Well, try recruiting golf to a cold weather school.
Yeah.
That was the knack that I learned, was how to recruit. You know, yeah, they're in the high desert. The falls are beautiful up there. But winter and springs are long up there, especially when you're trying to go out and practice.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my knack, was learning how to recruit in that weather. And, you know, when we're down in California in Fresno, it's kind of nice.
Oh, you got 12 months of a year.
When it's 365,
yeah,
that definitely helps the recruiting process for a few of them.
Absolutely. You know, it's fascinating to watch the evolution of everything. You mentioned the NIL part of it. Is there any set of worry about, you mentioned it a little bit in the getting into the golf, or do you feel like recruiting now is still somewhat in the same vein as recruiting back then? How is that process changing for you as you try to navigate it as many other college coaches have navigated it?
I don't think it's changed much as long as you find the kid that you're looking for, right? Mm-hmm. I think if it's a right fit, that won't make it, I don't think it'll be a problem. But again, if times change and everyone's kind of expecting a certain payout or thing,
yeah,
then it's going to make it challenging. But I think that we've been pretty fortunate in our recruiting and in the portal as well. So I hope we can keep that going.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You guys get ready to go for the first tournament of the year. You're going to be in Washington State's home tournament, sounds like, September 9th and September 10th. Of course, the one guy home tournament you get, the Watney Invitational. Yep. How awesome is that to put on every year? And do the guys count down the days from the day the season starts?
Well, especially when we win. So yeah. we won the Watney last February, yeah. and that's the first time since I was on the team in 2002. So that was nice to get that monkey off the back, off my back, and just get that momentum. But obviously, the home tournaments are only time to showcase our players in front of Fresno, and this year it's at San Joaquin Country Club, which is obviously one of our favorites, and we're looking to welcome a good field, and we hope to go back to back.
Did you hear from the Watneys when you finally won?
Coach is there, and coach is wonderful. He still helps our scoring, and he volunteers for our events. So he was front row seat, and he was just as excited as we were.
I bet you it was awesome to have a Watney on the team to win the Watney.
Yeah. I mean, James has been a great addition to the team.
Yeah.
He's a wonderful kid, and he's got got some nice lineage. So,
absolutely.
We're looking forward to him this year, I think, stepping up and being one of our top couple of players.
I'll leave it at this question, and then we'll wrap it up here. What are you looking forward to most about what this season is for the Fresno State men's golf program?
Yeah, I just think we need to get back to basics. We need to get back to what makes us good. We added some players that I think is going to add some depth, which is more competition, which is going to breed more success. So maturity. Let's remain focused on what we're trying to do.
Yeah.
And I think we're going to have a lot of success.
Well, we look forward to it, Coach. And we're excited to see what the Bulldogs do on the links this year. Should be a lot of fun once again. Chad, appreciate it as always. And you're always welcome back.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate
Absolutely.
It.
Chad Spencer of Fresno State Men's Golf here on 1430. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back with more Behind the Bench right after this on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader. Hi, welcome back to Behind the Bench here at 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader. While I sound doom and gloom for Giants baseball, I will say, and I was just reading this stat off air, and I'll read it on air. It can be worse outside of being a Giants fan, because I read a stat that the Orioles had scored 50 runs since Saturday in baseball. The Arizona Diamondbacks have scored one run, one entire run. Since Saturday. And Julia, you like your Diamondbacks a little bit, because you're out there in Arizona from time to time. It can be worse if you're a Giants fan, right? Is that fair to say? It can be worse.
Yeah, I at this rate, I don't even know what to do. Most of the time when one team is starting to sink, I'm like, okay, at least I have the other one. But right now, I feel like I have nothing at this point.
See, Jorge, it can be worse. You could score just one run for since Saturday.
Could it be worse, though?
Could be worse.
I guess.
All right. We're going to do another edition of 50 States in 50 Days Trivia. We got two states to get through, so let's see if we can cook on this one. Jorge was 5 for 5. Julia was 1 for 1. We got all 6 athletes, so we'll see if we can do this here. We're going to start with the state of Idaho. Are you ready?
Let's do it.
All right. This is for top three athletes born in the state of Idaho. And we're starting with number 3. Good luck. This is a 3-time ACHA Division I All-American, 3-time Patty Kazmaier Memorial Award Top 10 finalist, a Women's College Hockey Association Player of the Year, NCAA Frozen Four All-Tournament team, and Wisconsin's all-time leader in career goals at college. Yeah.
A college hockey player?
Well, not just
not a men's,
not just but, college, because she's also then became a 4-time Olympic medalist, gold in 2018, silver in 2010, silver also in 2018, and silver in 2022.
I have no idea.
Yeah, I have no
clue. Wait, she played in Wisconsin.
She played at Wisconsin, the University of Wisconsin. Yeah. You are looking for the hockey player named Hillary Knight. Hillary Knight.
Okay.
You've heard this name. I know.
I have heard that name.
You have heard this name.
Yes.
All right. Let's see if we can. We're 0 for 1. We're 0 for 1. All right. Second ranked athlete born in the state of Idaho. He is a 1996 first team All-American in college, 1996 Pac-10 Offensive Player of the Year at Arizona State, was also a Heisman finalist in 1996.
That would be Jake Plummer.
That would be Jake Plummer. I knew you would get that.
ASU.
I knew you'd get the ASU athlete.
Yeah.
42nd overall pick in the 97 NFL draft, set Cardinals rookie records in passing touchdowns, which was later suppressed by Kyler Murray. He was a 1-time Pro Bowler for the Broncos in 2005 and went to an ASU championship game. I'd argue he had a better career than this number one guy. This number one player is the All-Idaho Player of the Year, Idaho Gatorade High School Football Player of the Year, first team All-State, and went to play football at, I believe, BYU. Not very helpful right now.
Did he play in the pros?
He has played in the pros, because he then signed with the Saints in 2017. Eventually being named the 2018 NFL Special Teams Player of the Week Award in Week 14, and then became the 2022 Week 5 NFC Offensive Player of the Week. And he's the only player in the Super Bowl era with 10 career rushing touchdowns, passing touchdowns, and receiving touchdowns.
He's a quarterback?
Only player in the Super Bowl era currently playing football that has 10-plus career rushing touchdowns, passing touchdowns, and receiving touchdowns. Hmm. Should be very obvious now.
So, oh.
The only one player.
The Saints.
Yeah, with the Saints. Come on. It's on the tip of your tongue.
Hill.
Who?
What's his freaking name?
I'll give it to you. Taysom Hill.
Yeah, I was going to say Tyson.
Taysom Hill. Who had a better career, Plummer or Hill?
I want to say Hill because he's still playing.
I think Jake Plummer had a better
career. He was a better quarterback.
Because Taysom Hill doesn't have a nickname. It's Jake the Snake. Everybody knows Jake the Snake.
Yeah,
I think he had a better career in college. I don't know about a better career in the NFL.
All right. Idaho.
That's debatable.
How about that, Idaho? Idaho representing. Do we have any other athletes from Idaho that were notable? Harmon Killebrew. Why is he not here? Jason Schmidt. Merrill Hodge. Luke Ridenour. Peekaboo Street. I remember Peekaboo Street from Olympic days. All right, we're going to the state of Mississippi for the final 5 minutes of this segment. These are big-time athletes. Here we go. Number three. This is a Super Bowl champ in the 80s, an MVP in the 70s, an offensive player of the year, five-time first-team All-Pro in the NFL, nine-time Pro Bowler between the 70s and the 80s.
Can you tell me his position?
He started 178 consecutive games, the most ever, by a running back.
Okay.
Don't you cheat. Julia, I'm looking at the phone.
Was he with the Bears?
Could be.
Is it Walter Payton?
Walter Payton from the state of Mississippi is correct. Walter Payton. What gave it away for Walter Payton?
Because you said maybe in the Bears.
Maybe.
Because I knew some stat, but I didn't really know if it was him or not. Yeah.
Walter Payton. What you just... Absolutely crazy.
Because you would have told me no if he wasn't from.
Who could be better than Walter Payton from the state of Mississippi? We're about to find out.
I know one, but you're probably gonna name him here soon.
Super Bowl champ in the 90s, three-time MVP, NFL Offensive Player of the Year, three-time first team All-Pro, 11-time Pro Bowler, and a Hall of Famer in the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 2016.
16.
Julia, you got a guess?
2016. So.
The first quarterback to throw 500 or more touchdown passes, as well as being the first to throw for over 70,000 passing yards.
Quarterback in 16.
Has started the most games consecutively ever in National Football League history.
I'm trying to think of, like, my childhood.
16.
Mm-hmm. Played predominantly in the 90s and the aughts.
How many Super Bowls did he win?
One.
Okay.
Is it?
From Mississippi. He played.
Come on.
I think I know.
Is it, like, Brett Favre?
Is it Brett Favre?
Yeah.
It is Brett Favre. That's Brett Favre. I feel like I gifted that a little bit. You guys had to be spoon-fed a little bit of that.
Yeah.
One.
Well, I had him or I was thinking Archie Manning because he's also from Mississippi. Right?
Yeah.
Archie Manning didn't win
a Archie Manning's from Louisiana.
Oh,
or is he from Mississippi? Yeah. Anyways, whatever. I don't know. He might be here. I don't know. Oh, yeah, you're right. He is from Mississippi. He's not on the list.
He played in Louisiana, but.
This number one athlete from Mississippi is also a Super Bowl champ. Actually, three-time Super Bowl champ, an MVP of a Super Bowl, two-time NFL Offensive Player of the Year, 10-time first-team All-Pro, 13-time Pro Bowler, and a Pro Football Hall of Famer in 2010.
It's a GOAT.
Who is it?
The GOAT.
Tell me.
Jerry Rice.
Jerry Rice is correct. Yes. Jerry Rice. Yeah, I knew you had that in the back pocket.
You were waiting
because you knew Jerry Rice from Mississippi.
Ten Pro Bowls.
Mississippi Valley State, is that correct? Right?
Yeah.
That's where he went? Yeah. Crazy.
He had a crazy career there. Like the numbers are I don't think they're ever going to be broken.
Him, like, I'm trying to think of all, like, the weird, because all the great wide receivers come from weird colleges, right? Like,
small schools.
Randy Moss went to Marshall, right?
Small schools because one of the things they said is they develop the way to catch weird passes because their quarterbacks aren't that good.
Yeah, so they just can catch anything.
So, yeah, and then when they get to the pros, they're more like they could catch from anywhere pretty much.
Here are your list of notable athletes also from the state of Mississippi: Archie Manning, DeMario Davis, Steve McNair, Chris Jones, A.J. Brown, D.K. Metcalf, Roy Oswalt, Justin Steele, Garrett Crochet, Chet Walker, Antonio McDice, Lindsey Hunter, Al Jefferson, Mo Williams, Ruthie Bolton.
NFL, man. Like, just NFL teams are fed from
Mississippi. Pretty insane stuff there for the list there. All right. So there you go. 50 states and 50 days trivia. You guys went 5 for 6? You missed Hillary Knight.
Yeah, I had no idea what it was.
On Thursday, we're going to do it again. We're not going to do it for tomorrow's show, but on Thursday, we will have Minnesota and Ohio.
So, all right, okay.
So a top three from either of those states. I think you have an idea what Ohio's going to look like, but but I'll digress. Anyways, all right, we got another hour of our show coming up here on 1430. And when we come back, we'll do a little Rams deep dive preview into our trip for tomorrow, what we're most excited about, all that stuff. Stay with us. More Behind the Bench rolls along here on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader.
He's got the knowledge.
Because once again, I have to come on air and talk about how right I am once again in anything that it comes to sports.
He's got the questions.
I'm going to lose it. Are you kidding me? What are we doing here?
He's got the guess.
20th head coach in Fresno State history here, Matt. It's, is it hard to believe sometimes still the 20th head coach here in program history?
It's all moved really quickly here over the course of the last 5-6 weeks, but super excited to be here.
Phil Bonatti is the voice for the Central Valley sports leader. Behind the Bench starts now. Brought to you by Helena Agri.
That's right, Behind the Bench for one more hour here as we take you up to 5 o'clock today. That's right, 5 o'clock. I know we're normally going to 6 o'clock, usually on the docket, but quite simply, it is easier for us to get down to L.A. a little bit faster. We have to hit our time there, so we're trying to get down to L.A. We're going to get down to L.A. for L.A. Rams training camp, which is going to be at Loyola Marymount tomorrow, so we'll be down there live for that show. But in order for us to do it, we're trying to leave at a certain time. So
trying to hit the traffic,
you know, we'll hit the traffic. I know that for a fact. But it's just a matter of not hitting the traffic.
A day early instead of on the day.
Yeah, we're, you know, God forbid we left the morning of. I would not have the strength in me to feel comfortable about doing it. So but
through that whole grapevine.
There are not many things I don't trust less than the grapevine. There are not many things in the world I trust less than the grapevine. What else? I'm trying to think of anything else I would trust less than the grapevine and making sure I get there on time. Not many things, right?
Yeah, I'm thinking about it.
Satan himself, that's about it. That's all I got. I don't trust many other things. So anyways. Or GMs at trade deadlines. How about that one?
Okay. Yeah.
So, anyways, trying to make a joke here. One of this day in sports history, real quick, before we get into our Rams talk, this day in sports history. So yesterday was an interesting day because this was the day that Barry Sanders abruptly retired from the National Football League. And I was poring over his stats and I got to respect the game a little bit more for Barry Sanders, and I got to understand that a lot of people really feel like Barry Sanders is the greatest running back of all time, pound for pound, whatever he's done. And, Jorge, you look at these ridiculous stats sometimes of Barry Sanders, and I sit here and I'm like, wow, he is the greatest running back of all time, in my opinion. I know Emmett has the accruement and the allotment of yardage and all those statistics that are out there, but Jorge, let me tell you these statistics before you rebuttal here. Barry Sanders had 15,269 yards in 10 seasons played in his career. Only three other guys have more: Frank Gore, Walter Payton, Emmett Smith. Frank Gore played 16 years. Walter Payton played 13 years. And Emmett Smith, who has 3,000 more yards than Barry Sanders did in 15 seasons. You surely, with Barry Sanders' pace, he would have passed that, no doubt. Sanders I believe is the only guy to rush for at least 1,100 yards in all 10 of his first 10 seasons there. So, do we have an argument? Barry Sanders, greatest running back ever?
No, I agree with you. I was able to watch him his last season, and at least I remember watching him his last season. I mean, he was slowing down at the end, but he was still able to hit that. It was weird how he would hit a hole. All of a sudden, he's 5 yards ahead of everybody else.
Yeah.
And just couldn't catch him. You know what it reminds me of Megatron.
Yeah.
I can't remember his name, but and they're both playing the same team.
Calvin Johnson.
There you go.
They didn't play at the same team on the same time. But
no, not on the same time, but they were both just so ahead of their time. I feel like they're just players who just had like this magic in them where, you know, Calvin Johnson could just go up and catch any ball that was thrown to him. And Sanders could just go out there and just run around any defense, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It was special. It was special watching them, definitely.
It's like if we get Saquon Barkley to retire in 2 years from now. Like, that's what the equivalent of it is.
And honestly, it's weird to see that, you know, these kids think that football's forever, or that at least that they're trying to, like, stretch out their football careers the most. But when he retired, he was doing it at a high level still.
Mm-hmm.
So it's weird.
You know what's crazy, too? You want to hear the stats that are just insane as far as that's concerned? Saquon, you want to know how many career yards he has, and he's 28 years old? Because we all sit there and just think Saquon's amazing, and he's like the modern day, you know, top running back ever. He's only got 7,200 yards in his career. I know he had some injuries and stuff like that. It's crazy.
To be honest, the NFL changed a little bit more to a throwing league.
I get it.
However, the way that in the 90s they were playing the defense and the way that he was, you know, getting hit, it was a lot different than what they do now. But, man, to see how many yards he got in so little time, it's magic, man.
He's nearly at 10,000 yards all scrimmage. I don't imagine Barry Sanders was catching many passes. Or maybe he was. I'm curious now if I want to see what Barry Sanders was doing in the receiving game, because I can't imagine it was a whole lot. Yeah, 2,900 yards receiving for Barry.
That's not bad for a
running
back.
That's not bad for, you know, the 90s, you know, stuff like that. Derrick Henry's at 11,000 rushing yards career-wise, and he's at 31 years old. So I don't think
he's been in the league for a long time.
Yeah, I just don't think we're going to see another Barry Sanders ever again.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
I don't know. Anyways. Speaking of football, NFL, all this stuff that we are getting excited for, we're going to be heading to Rams camp, like I said. And so I wanted to pull Julia here real quick because I wanted to ask you, you didn't know just a couple days ago you weren't even going until because we weren't sure we were going to go or not, but now we revealed it on Monday's show that we are. What are you looking forward to most about Rams camp?
I'm looking forward to just the atmosphere and mm-hmm. being, for one, in that situation. Like, I've never been, so I'm just looking forward to that and seeing, like, what it's like.
Yeah.
But also, like, on the football side of things, I'm looking forward to seeing, like, Devontae Adams and Puka Nacua and seeing them together. And so, I mean, I'm looking forward most to that. And then just being there with everyone is what I'm excited for.
What is your vibe on the Rams this year going in? Like, because I know – obviously you're an avid football person when it comes to this, but like are they one of the top like three interesting teams in football right now because of the capabilities they have, because of the personnel they have and what they have to it? Because I feel like I sit there with that opinion. I'm genuinely curious on whether people feel like the Rams are a compelling storyline this year in the NFL. So I might be a little too close to the situation, but where do you feel like the Rams are as far as the dialogue of the NFL?
See, I think they are a really interesting team. I mean, I was at the Vikings-Rams playoff game last year in Arizona, and, you know, I thought the Vikings, personally, I'm a Vikings fan, so yeah. I thought we were going to beat the Rams real good, and mm-hmm. we didn't. So I was like, okay, you know, this Rams team is pretty good, and I think they – can be good this year. I think they are an interesting team that I will be paying attention to. I just think it's interesting with Stafford getting older and getting hurt more, just how much longer he can keep this going. But I think they are going to be interesting, especially this season.
Yeah, we won't get to see Stafford throw, I believe, this week. He is sitting out of practice all week this week because of the back situation, which is something the Rams say can be handled and will be taken care of. And the plan is to have him for week one when they host the Texans. I do think it'll be interesting to see how, you know, how connected the rest of the offense will look compared to without Stafford. I think the strength of this team isn't just where the offense sits, because I think that is the flashy, fun thing to look at for the Rams. But the story of the Los Angeles Rams is they are essentially, I would say, like built like the Philadelphia Eagles in of the sense of, especially on the defensive side, of the amount of rushers they can throw at you and the way you can attack a quarterback and attack a line. You saw it better than anybody when they faced Minnesota last year. Sam Darnold was running for his life.
Yep.
In that football game. And even in the game after that, in the playoff game, Jalen Hurts even he got hurt a little bit, and they got a safety on the Eagles in that game as well. So they were the Rams are as big of a threat to change a game when it comes to the front four as any other team in football right now. I would argue it, they're just on par with the Eagles as far as that threat is concerned. And when you have that, it's the equivalent to me of like having a really good quarterback there as well. When you have one of these things, you can win at least 9 games just based off the idea that you have a D-line that can just absolutely maul somebody. But when you have a good quarterback to great quarterback that can be on the other side, then you become an elite team. That's why the Eagles are a Super Bowl favorite right now. That's why the Chiefs are very good, because the Chiefs can go at it pressure-wise as far as the front four, front seven can do it as well. There's not many other teams I can think of that have that ability, in my opinion, to be able to do both things very well. There's only a few that have it. The Chiefs, to me, the Eagles, and to me, the Rams sit there as well. I know the Lions have what the Lions have, but I don't feel like it is up to par in the collective whole as those three other teams I just listed. So I'm hyped. I'm hyped to see what this Rams team looks like, because last year we had the sniff test and we felt like this team was capable of doing what it did last year, which was a play away from beating the eventual Super Bowl champs. I firmly believe this team can get to Santa Clara this year for the Super Bowl based off of what I'm feeling and what I'm seeing. I just hope it passes the sniff test tomorrow, because it's all observing, seeing how guys interact with each other. That's the part of the game that we don't get a chance to see very often. We just hear from, as far as that's concerned. That's what I'm looking forward to most, what the interaction between the players are going to be as far as tomorrow is concerned. And I can't wait to see it. I can't wait to see it tomorrow. So it's going to be a fascinating thing. Do the Rams, what's your most interesting thing about the Rams, you think? You mentioned the wide receivers and where they go in. Is that where you're going to target most for you, Julia, when you're looking at the Rams tomorrow?
Yeah, I feel like specifically them. I think just because I like Devontae Adams, like hometown guy. Also just Puka Nacua has been so good, especially 2 years ago. So them, for me, I just feel like they're the flashy part. They're definitely going to be fun to look at. I think I'm also going to kind of observe the QB situation backup-wise, since we're not going to see Stafford with Jimmy G and Stetson Bennett. So I'm curious to see what that is kind of looking like in the case that Stafford were to get hurt or keep having this soreness that he has been having.
Jorge, I know you'll be listening from afar, but the Rams are a compelling team. I know you're a Niners fan, so we'll try to keep it partial, but you could do a good job at doing that. What is the most interesting thing in your mind as far as what the Rams are presenting for 2025?
I think I want to see them all play cohesively as a team. They got the stars, they got the coach, they got the returning quarterback. Pretty much they're all set up for a good season, maybe even a great season. Now, can they all play along with each other? Can there be, you know, a unison, all-together team that's going to have one goal in mind? To go and make it all the way to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Can they do that? Is that something that we could see maybe in when you guys are down there and see if they could, if that's what part of what they're doing, then I'll believe more in, like you said, they might make it to Santa Clara.
They might. They might. They certainly could. I think that's going to be a distinct. There's a lot of advantages that the Rams present when it comes to the football field things. They just can't start slow like they did last year, or else I think we'd be posting a bunch of playoff games at SoFi last year. But 1-4 ain't going to do it to start the year again. So I don't think the Rams can afford that. Okay. Very excited. Can't wait to see it. We're going to be leaving like literally less than an hour to head down to LA. So I'm looking forward to that. But we still got some more show to get to. And I don't want to keep Gabe Camarillo waiting. So why don't we get him on the phone line and talk to our KMPH reporter. We're going to talk.
Our old buddy.
Our old buddy Gabe Camarillo is going to come on next. Talking about Fresno State. The camp over the past few days. We'll discuss with him, talk about all things in the topics as well. Stay with us. Behind the Bench rolls along here on 1430 ESPN. Hi, welcome back to Behind the Bench here on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader, joined by our second guest of the day here on 1430 ESPN. It is our one and only KMPH's Gabe Camarillo, who joins us now on the Lee's Air Hotline. Gabe, how are we doing on this Tuesday? Hope you're doing well.
I'm staying indoors and I'm staying cool, so I am doing well.
You didn't have the camp to go visit today. I think they had the day off today, so you get a little bit of a break.
Off, yep.
You get a little bit of the break from the sunlight, but Fresno State football players also getting a little bit of a break today as well. So good to talk to you.
Even though it's my day off, when you texted me this morning asking me to come on and talk about Bulldog football, I was so excited. Like, this is an easy – I'm okay with, you know, turning on the laptop for an hour to gather my thoughts and then talking to you on my day off any day of the week.
Hey, it's vacation when you enjoy it, right? That's what it is. The day off when you enjoy it. So, exactly. I gotta imagine you were very thrilled, obviously, at the idea. I was noticing, obviously, we had camp last week that started for Fresno State, but we started way earlier in the calendar than we're used to, right? So I gotta imagine you were already ready to lick your chops at covering football.
So,
yeah.
I was so excited for fall camp. Literally video me dancing on the first day of fall camp, like how excited I was.
I saw that video. Not too bad, right? Well, let's talk about it, right? Because it was exciting to have Fresno State getting ready and off and running here, and they are ready to go as far as getting set for facing Kansas in a little less than a month from now. What is the big thing you were looking for when you walked into camp over the last few days? What was the biggest thing you were looking for? I think there's the obvious story. Maybe go with the obvious story and then the not-so-obvious story in your mind.
Well, the reason why I was so excited was of all the storylines. Like, there really was the major quarterback question that we had going in, and it was made a question because as soon as Joshua Wood goes to Idaho, and for a split second, you think, oh, it's E.J. Warner's job outright, unless Jaden Nando has a huge summer, which he has, but more on him later. Then they get Carson Conklin right away. As soon as Conklin enters the portal, he tells, you know, my station that Fresno State was right there the next morning, the night after he entered the portal with an offer. And it was a matter of within 12 to 24 hours, Conklin was a Bulldog after he just stopped being a Hornet. So this Fresno State staff really believes in Carson Conklin. He's confident that he has some skills over the other guys, but then you also look at E.J. Warner and the experience that he's built over his career. So he is the active career passing yard leader in college football.
Hmm.
And second place is Mikey Keene, which is pretty funny that Mikey Keene is second all-time, second career active, not all-time, but of the active college quarterbacks in the FBS, E.J. Warner had more passing yards than all of them. So I think that's a strong statement to how much experience he has. And then, obviously, Jaden Nando is the third wild card option that Matt Ed's confirmed is a legitimate starting quarterback candidate. And I guess maybe people thought he would have a step behind the other guys because Conklin had over 1,000 snaps last year as Sac State starting quarterback. E.J. Warner's built a long career of starts. But Jaden Mandel's right here in the mix with them, which shows the potential and talent that Jaden Mandel has. And Mandel looks really good out there. He looks leaner, bouncier, and a strong arm he's always had.
Yeah. What do you think? And I'll follow up with this. You know, we hear a lot about what Coach Entz's personality is going to be with this team and what he wants as far as the controlling the line of scrimmage, controlling the ball, not looking to be what we may have seen over the last 10 years with a Tedford style or a DeRuiter style team that's going to be hitting deep shots left and right. I'm sure we'll see deep attacks here and there, but is it just simply about having the quarterback who's going to be the one that is going to just make sure this thing goes well as opposed to putting us in poor positions? And do you think that wins it out as far as the camp is concerned?
That could be very well what it is, because that's what Matt Entz has said himself. Like, whoever can make sure that they make the simple plays, the simple reads, not the hero plays, he said, like, those would be the guys who could be the starting quarterback. And that was back in spring ball, so maybe this stance has changed. But I think all three of them are capable of doing that, especially Warner, because he's done that similar role. He's been a game manager for the Rice Owls and the Temple Owls. I guess it's funny he's played for two Owls. but that's EJ Warner's role as game manager. Like, he's done that before at those previous stops. The question you might have is, can he do that at a championship level? Well, if you're playing turnover-free football, you can, but Warner has had a penchant for interceptions that's similar to another former Bulldog quarterback, Mikey Keene. In fact, Warner has more career interceptions despite having more career passing yards than Mikey Keene. So,
yeah.
I mean, is the turnover bug going to hurt Warner in some of these games? Is a fair question. That's probably why the coaching staff brought in Carson Conklin, because he got a transfer in December, but then when Josh Wood leaves, the need to get another transfer says that this, if your coaching staff is evaluating multiple options to make sure they get the right choice. And I think that's good, because in this day and age, with this kind of roster they have, they could win right away with the right quarterback.
It's been interesting, right? Because it's been a little bit. I mean, we had the Mikey Keene quarterback competition that we had before with Keene versus Fife, I believe, a couple of years ago, right? And so now, but since then, we've really, Hayner was fighting for it as a quarterback battle. You've been seeing a few of these quarterback battles before. Is this good for a team going into a season? Because it feels like the more successful seasons we have are usually when we have a quarterback battle that sits at the top of the start of the season. It's interesting.
It's funny you mention that, because I was just thinking about that before. 2023, this reminded me so much of that offseason, that fall camp, because Mikey Keene was the new guy and Logan Fife was also considered a contender because he had filled in for Hayner the year before when Hayner went down and he got that huge San Jose State win that started the winning streak they went on.
Mm-hmm.
The point is, what's funny about that 2023 offseason was we were similarly asking, well, will they pick the returning guy that knows Tedford's offense, or will they pick this newcomer who's come from UCF, Mikey Keene? And they went with Mikey Keene, and they started the season, I think, 8-1, and were ranked twice. So, like that, we could see that with this transfer quarterback. That's what I'm saying. The roster is good. In this day and age, you can win right away with a transfer quarterback. In fact, if a school knows that better than anyone, it's Fresno State. Look at McMarion and Hayner, right? So They can win this year if they get the right guy under center, because they got a solid running game, they got a really promising defense, and a defensive coordinator whose record at Northern Illinois was having one of the best defenses statistically in the country. So they have the right pieces around the quarterback, I believe. But then there's that huge question at receiver, because there's so many guys not in that position as well. So, I mean, we can talk about that if you want next. Or
yeah, is that your underrated storyline, if we want to allude to that? Because I think the clear and obvious thing was at the quarterback position. But is that your underrated storyline going in?
A little bit, because you lost so many good guys like Jalen Moss and Raylan Sharp. If you had them on this year's team, we're talking about championship favorites, right?
Oh, yeah.
Or am I getting too far?
No,
I'm going a bit too far saying if they had Moss and Sharp and Donaldson in the same offense, like,
yeah.
That's just a transfer portal.
No,
that gets you kind of frustrated when you think about it.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. It would have been a phenomenal team. We would be, we'd be beating Boise by 20.
So with that being said, that's why that's the biggest question. Nothing against what Matt Entz has done and these coaches have done. It's just the world that we live in, a day and age. Transfer portal can wreck a team's chances in, like, subtle ways, or he can make a team's chances, like when Ashton Jensen chose not to transfer and he stayed at Boise State and carried Boise State literally to the CFP. So That being said, that's why receiver is at a huge question mark. But Josiah Freeman has a lot of talent and could be wide receiver one. It's just who can be the depth behind him. And that was the position that this staff targeted in the portal. They got two guys that caught my eyes because they came from the ACC.
Yeah.
You got Maryland. Well, is Maryland in the ACC? Forgive me, I could be wrong.
They Maryland's be Big Ten, right? Big Ten?
They had Ezekiel Abbott.
Yeah, they're Big Ten.
Abbott, who is a receiver guy now from Fresno State, that's been in a lot of praise I'm hearing around camp from different media outlets like myself and just from the coaches. So here's that name, Ezekiel Abbott. Remember it for the fall. And then Jaleel McClain, when he transferred to Fresno State, mm-hmm. I thought that was a sneaky good pickup because he comes from Louisville and he built a rapport with some of the Louisville guys there. But it just never really clicked for him. He never got the playing time. So I felt like those two guys coming from the Big Ten and the ACC were solid pickups. But can they play right away? Typically, Fresno State does get a receiver transfer that makes an impact soon. Like, think about the Shark last year, Jalen Gill the year before, Nico Remigio, the most famous one.
Yeah.
It's been a history of these. So if Fresno State keeps that trend up, then you can easily replace the huge losses of Raylan Sharp and Jalen Moss.
Well, can I alleviate the pressure on the wide receivers by pointing out the fact that I think we may be utilizing the tight end position a little bit more in the receiving game? You don't You don't hire Coach Ferentz just to have tight ends to block. I think they are going to be really involved in the receiving game, kind of pseudo like those tall one-on-one battle kind of guys that, like, especially we only have Josiah Freeman to be the one-on-one battle guy, and we lost him for half the year. So I think tight ends are going to alleviate the receiving pressure we may see from a lot of these wide receivers. Do you agree?
Richie Anderson, that's another name to know. Like, he did not get as much play time because I don't think McCann really utilized tight ends. He utilized a lot of screens. People had a lot of other offensive concepts.
It was the quick bubble screens on the outside, no tight ends being involved in anything.
Right, and that's why there were some key struggle spots running the football. But not with this offense, not with this philosophy of Josh Davis, the OC, saying to be a championship team, you have to run the football. That's not a question, it's a fact. So that's what he believes. That's why they're going to run the ball more than I believe last year's offensive coach did. But with that being said, the tight ends, I think, could be good pass catchers. Like, they're not just going to be pass, they're not going to be run blocking. They're going to be pass catching because Richie Anderson is, I believe, one of the breakout candidates for me, just based off of what I've seen from him from last year. All the coaches rave about him. Just saying right now, Richie Anderson, mm-hmm. he could be somebody that steps up as a starter in his first year. And that might be big because you're right, there are going to be a lot of multiple tight end looks.
Yeah, and where do you look when you go to a play action if your running game's going well? A lot of over-the-middle field stuff, you know, when you look at that, the tight end being right there available for you.
Do you agree, though, about Richie? Like, do you think Richie also has that potential?
I think any tight end has that potential, especially when they're coached by one of the best tight end coaches out there. I mean, Iowa's track record, let's be honest, is as good as anybody when it comes to tight end. And now we have that guy. Fresno State's going to corner the market in tight end receiving. I mean, come on. I love that idea.
And Brock Lino, I want to mention Brock Lino too, because that's another name I've heard this coach has mentioned, say that he's picking up quickly. These are younger tight ends, I think second-year players that are poised to make a jump. And you think about other trends in Fresno State championship seasons, besides transfer quarterbacks, there's been solid tight ends that are pass catchers, like Jared Rice, right? So
absolutely. One of the greatest,
something that you keep an eye on.
One of the greatest seasons when I was there at Fresno State. Marcel Jensen was one of the most imposing guys I've ever seen play a tight end position. Unfortunately, didn't work out in the NFL. I think he played for Jacksonville for a little bit. But the guys who play that position can be multifaceted in many ways. Where on the defense do you feel like the biggest question mark is? I think we're paying attention. It's a lot of new faces. I think a lot of people who – even I'm still having a hard time recognizing who's there. I know we talked to Flynn Claypool the other day. I know what we know from that side of things. But – what on the Coach Benedetto side of the ball do you feel like is the biggest question mark in your mind?
And it's funny because it's actually something I haven't really looked into as much yet. I've done stories on the defensive line. I know what I'm going to get in the secondary. But hearing Benedetto talk about his defensive playbook, and it's a 4-2-5 scheme, which we've seen multiple years here at Fresno State, not going to be something new to Bulldog returning players. You have two linebackers on the field. Who are those two linebackers? To be Logan Stute, who is, you know, getting a lot of reps out of Buchanan High School in this fall camp? Is it going to be the transfers? Instead of going with a returning guy, maybe they go with Jaden Pearson, who comes from Wheatley College, then he went to Utah State, and then he went to – he transferred back home to the Valley, to Fresno State. So a local guy, maybe, a Jaden Pearson. There's a lot of interesting candidates that you can look there. I think Simeon Harris, one of Pearson's former Utah State teammates, he could play a different kind of role as a nickelback, as that fifth guy in the secondary. So just some of the new guys I feel like are the questions for me. Like, can these guys step up right away? Similarly, we have seen defensive transfers step in and play right away for the Bulldogs.
Yeah.
Tyson Maeva was one of them at 21. Zaron Bland is the most famous one probably right now playing in the NFL. So these guys have been stepping in and making an immediate impact. Fresno State attracting all this NFL talent also breeds NFL talent, if that makes sense. Like, they're attracting guys who look at Fresno State as a stepping stone to the NFL. Because look at Lavelle Bailey making noise in Denver Broncos camp. And I think that's helping Fresno State and land a lot of these pretty good transfers.
Well, you segued right to the next topic, which we have a lot of little stories coming out of camp that is good, I guess. It sounds like good news to a lot of the Fresno State guys. So I'm wondering if you want to do some quick hitters on these from what we pulled yesterday. So saw some video. Jalen Cropper's getting a lot of look in the first unit for the Cowboys. He's catching some passes from Dak Prescott Jr. Jalen Marino Cropper. He's getting looks in the first unit. What do you make of that? Have you seen the videos of that?
No, it's really early to old camp.
Yeah.
It's July. I honestly don't try to watch as much of the training camp stuff now because by mid-August, those guys could be off the team. It's just how cutthroat it is to go to the NFL, right?
Yeah.
It could be one practice and then the next day you're not there anymore. And what I thought was interesting, though, speaking of former Fresno State guys who are competing for jobs, Jake Hayter.
Yeah, that's the
– he's a fascinating and a very, like, realistic – quarterback candidate, not somebody who you look at and say, oh yeah, sure, he's competing for the job, but he's third on the depth chart right now. No, he's like mixing it up with Tyler Shaw from Louisville and Rattler, who it still bewilders me that Jake Hayter and Spencer Rattler, after watching the quarterback documentary on Netflix and seeing Spencer Rattler, I think it's crazy that those two guys, knowing both guys almost personally now in TV and through covering them, like, that's interesting.
Is it really going to be Jake Hayter in that first lead spot? Are we really drinking that Kool-Aid? Or is, I mean, I'm hesitant on this.
So you're asking me about Jalen Cropper getting first team reps?
That's what I'm saying.
Cowboys, but you're not going to mention Hayter getting first team reps.
Well,
the States, like, one guy has a more realistic chance because one guy doesn't have George Pickens and CeeDee Lamb.
I was just going team by team, let's be honest with you. But I buried the lead with Hayter. You're right. I made that mistake.
No, you're fine, because I was thinking Cropper, like, it is good he's getting his time, but he's not going to get – he's not going to see the field. There's a lot of talented receivers on that depth chart. But he's a Cowboys fan, so it is cool that he is playing for his childhood team in training camp in Oxnard. But that's just really hard. Hayter has a much more direct path to finding an NFL starting spot than I think any of the guys – we're talking about. Lavelle Bailey might actually find a starting spot pretty soon, I should be honest, because he's a very rangy guy.
Yeah. What about
I think that's – you could replace – Hayter could replace Carr for being Fresno State's starting quarterback in the NFL.
What about our Fresno State guys in Kansas City, the Delanas and the Remigios of the world?
I think Delana could follow the Remigio path. Delana could be like what Remigio was last year, where he's not a starter, but he comes in on special teams. He comes in returning punts, essentially. Delana's speed is going to be his meal ticket right now because he is such a quick, straight-line runner. I still think about that play at the Rose Bowl, like, every other month, catching Kaz Allen. So that's going to be what keeps him on NFL rosters, I believe.
I'm trying to think of the other ones I had in the lexicon as far as that's concerned. I think, there's some Deron Bland stuff about him. You mentioned him earlier. Deron Bland, they asked him about extension. He wants to be in Dallas. We know how the Dallas Cowboys go about extensions. Would you predict in a year or two, is he still going to be a Dallas Cowboy, or do you feel Deron Bland could get payday somewhere else?
Yeah. You know, as a Raider fan, it's great to see him put on the silver and black and be close to that's the Fresno State, but I think the Raiders have already been or done that with former Bulldogs. So I would honestly say stay with the Cowboys. I think he has the chance with how he started his career. Not too long ago, he was first-team All-Pro with the most pick sixes in NFL history for a season. Like, he could go back to that level this season. Last year was riddled with injuries. He never really had a chance to set his foot, literally, because his foot was hurt. So not being able to set his footing in the NFL last year, he has the training camp to do that this year. I would not be surprised if he goes back to his All-Pro form and then stays with the Cowboys. It's going to be tough for the Cowboys to afford another All-Pro. I'm going to be clear, though.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what you're referring to, like the fact that they won't even pay Micah Parsons.
Yeah, that's yeah, exactly. Micah Parsons, who already is trying to find that extension. And yeah.
Do you think they would pass on Micah Parsons for Jaron Bland?
I just wonder what is value. To me, Micah Parsons' position is much more of a position of value. I think as good as Deron Bland's been, I feel like secondary guys can move around a lot more in the NFL than a significantly good pass rusher, in my opinion. It's hard for me to believe that Cowboys would actually let Micah Parsons go.
But they signed everyone else. So what does that tell Micah Parsons that?
Yeah.
They signed Dak Prescott. They signed CeeDee Lamb. They signed all their guys by now, and they're not signing Micah. So if I'm Micah Parsons, what message does that send me as a player?
Especially if Bland does get signed. Exactly. So
I think Bland will get signed.
Yeah.
Honestly, you might disagree. I think being a lockdown corner in the NFL, in this NFL,
yeah,
is much more important than being a pass rusher. That's a hot take. I know. I've always heard you got to have a stud pass rusher to get into the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true to an extent, but look at the Eagles. Eagles had multiple pass rushers that were good, not great, and they beat a team that has, or they beat a team that have these number one guys like your Nick Bosa's and your TJ Watts and your Michael Parsons. When's the last time one of those teams made it to a Super Bowl and won it, besides Von Miller in 2015?
The Rams had Donald. I'd throw that out in 21, you know? I think.
Okay, that was 4 years ago. That's one.
Okay. The Chiefs with Chris Jones after a couple of years, up the interior pressure. I feel like interior pressure is maybe more important than maybe your outside pressure, as Von Miller had.
The Chiefs have an All-Pro in Trent McDuffie. Like, they have a number one guy who is a game changer. And I honestly look at the Broncos and I look at them having a Bo Nix, but then Pat Surtain being the number one, almost like Revis Island 2.0. So there's history of these lockdown corners.
But the Broncos had, you could go to the Von Miller Broncos, but they also had, they had Kid Talib and, Chris Harris back there at the corner. Yeah. They weren't slouches in the corner position. It wasn't just Von Miller doing everything. So every defense is good.
Defense is great, yeah.
Yeah, so
yeah,
it's all part of the thing. One last question for you. I'm going to go to a different topic here real quick. How open is this high school football season for you? Have you started looking at the high school football season yet? Are you a week away from maybe taking a look at that? And is it just in Central's world? Yeah, go ahead.
Are we in Central's world of winning games? Might be. They have a lot coming back, but the one thing about high school football in this area is never the same year to year. That's what I've noticed. Since the early Central dynasty, which was fueled with Tompkins touchdowns and young Xavier Worthy on those teams that won state titles. Since then, it's been an era of parity. Mm-hmm. A lot of Bakersfield schools have won it. Liberty's done it multiple times back to back, 21-22. And then Clovis North gets a championship, but then Central reclaims the crown. And people think this could be the start of something because their starting quarterback was so young and they bring back the leading rusher and arguably one of the top five players in the state, you could say, regardless of division, in Brandon Smith, like just in terms of leading his team to a state championship game and him playing at an exceptional level in the state playoffs. He has one of the most sought after monikers in high school football in California. He is legitimately an all state performer for Central. So you look at him and you say, okay, this is the number one team, but who can challenge them to the crown? And there are some really good challenges. You got Clovis High School, their senior quarterback, Deegan Rose. I remember when he was a freshman, playing as a freshman varsity football and starting games for the Clovis High Cougars. It's crazy to see his career come to this point where this is his last chance to win a Valley title. He's been, you know, called someone who can lead the Cougars to a Valley Championship, so he's going to be playing with extra motivation. They got one of the top running backs in the Valley, Maddox Merrill, committed to Fresno State.
Yeah.
And then the receivers and the skill position players for Clovis are solid. So, yeah, this is Clovis's best chance to win a Valley Championship since Nate Johnson teams. And those have some talented players, but were they able to bring it together as a team? That was a question we had about those Clovis Cougars. Could be the same one for this team just because this is that's what it's going to take. You're going to have to play cohesively to beat Central because Central is such a tight-knit group with a lot of D1 prospects there. One other team I'll throw in there as a wild card, like a dark horse pick to win it all. Can you guess what I'm going to say right now?
Clovis
You're
West.
Too.
Clovis West.
There you go. Yep. You know exactly.
J.J. Howard.
They're possessing maybe a top five talented quarterback in this past 10 years. When you look at Adrian Martinez, who got offers from Tennessee and Nebraska, you look at Xavier Worthy, who had a ton of offers. He almost went to Michigan, but then he went to Texas. J.J. Howard is in that category with how many offers he's picked up. Now, those are scholarship offers from Oregon, from Utah, BYU, Miami.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of blue bloods in there. But then you keep in mind, what did he do on the field to earn them? You're not just getting these offers just for fun. No one really gets them in this area. J.J.'s getting them because as a freshman, he was so big for his age, so strong with an arm that a lot of coaches are loving. That's why he's getting these offers, because he has a really special arm to throw the deep ball with ease. Now you're seeing him also run like a Vince Young type of quarterback, kind of just barreling through guys. Like, he can grow into this role as a dual threat quarterback if that's what the offense calls him to do. But if they need to be a pocket passer, well, he's excelling as a pocket passer. That's what he is, a pocket passer who can move like a mobile quarterback. So that's why he's so special. But then can you just have that quarterback and nobody else? Can they surround him with good pieces? They got a Rolando Jefferson receiver, a fourth. So Rolando Jefferson, the fourth. I remember his dad, Rolando Jefferson, who was a standout for Edison. So he has that lineage. I think there's some questions about Clovis West, but they definitely have the guy that can lead them to a championship at quarterback.
I'll never forget calling his first game and that comeback against Edison and Huntington Beach. What a game. What a game to announce your time in high school. So I will not forget that for sure. And I'm sure and we hope to be calling more games with J.J. Howard and Clovis West. Gabe, we're out of time, but I appreciate you taking the time today. And we'll see you out in the football field. We'll see you out there. And where can people find you real quick?
Find me on Twitter or X, is what they call now, at Gabe Camarillo _. I post a lot of my stories that I do covering Fresno State and high school. And I'm also doing these lists for high school football, like best running backs, best receivers. And I'm getting some flack because people think, oh, he's not saying my guy. Like, I have to say every single player in the Valley. It's also because I don't know everybody. Like, there's so many graduations that happen every year, so many key guys in high school football that go away. And then there's these new names that come up. So,
yeah.
Like, Clovis, who's the quarterback? I hear it's Jamie Spurgeon. They've had Ty Miller for 4 years. Now this is a new era for Clovis. So there's a lot of change. Keep me updated on Twitter so you can make sure I know everyone who's the up-and-comers, the new guys.
Like absolutely.
The J.J. Howard and the future stars.
Absolutely. Gabe, appreciate the info as always. Appreciate the conversation. And have a good rest of your Thursday, man. Enjoy the rest of your day off.
All right. Thank you, Phil.
All right, we'll be right back with more Behind the Bench right here on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader. I got my peaches out in Georgia. Oh yeah. I get my from California. All right, welcome back to Behind the Bench here on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader. Big thanks to Gabe Camarillo for joining us in the last segment. KMPH is Gabe Camarillo, formerly our Gabe Camarillo. Boy, Gabe can talk. We love him. So, but you enjoy the information that we have there from him. But Jorge, you were locked in that whole 30 minutes. I have you on the air. You don't have your mic on. Come on, that's you.
I took it was the channels. I had to take them off in order to talk to him. But I had to tell you to go to commercial because We're going a little bit long.
You were cutting me off like 5 minutes before Gabe was done talking. So you were generally, hey, let's go, let's go. All right, let's go over the schedule before we go. And that is what we have here, which is going to be, we're done at 5 o'clock today. We have Giants and Pirates coming up later today, 6:15 pregame with a 6:45 first pitch, Giants and Pirates from 14:30 from San Francisco. Tonight at 6:30, A's and Mariners from Sacramento. That's on 790 with a 7:05 first pitch. Tomorrow, Sportsline Bulldog over Tony D is not happening. My show will happen after the Giants and the Pirates are done playing baseball. That's a 12:15 pregame with a 12:45 first pitch. Once the Giants and Pirates game is over, then we will be on the air. We are targeting a start time of 4 p.m. live from Rams camp in Los Angeles. That is when you will listen to us. And we will then go up till 6 o'clock, and we will toss it to Grizzlies baseball on 14:30. Grizzlies in Rancho Cucamonga. The Quakes in town taking on the Grizzlies. 6:35 pregame with a 6:50 first pitch. Tim Slack on the call. A's and Mariners over on the other side. Thursday, we'll have Sportsline Bulldog Hour with Tony D from 2 to 3. We'll have my show from 3 to 5 from Fashion Furniture. 2-hour show on 14:30. Hall of Fame game on Westwood 1, which is Lions and Chargers, will play at 5 p.m. Folks, NFL football on our airwaves Thursday. It's back. And it's in all of its glory. Cannot wait. Grizzlies and Rancho Cucamonga will be on Thursday on 790, 6:35 pregame with a 6:50 first pitch. We'll be back Friday. Sportsline Bulldog Hour with Tony D, 2 to 3. We'll have my show from 3 to 3:40 as the Giants are in New York to take on the Mets. A's are going to host Arizona all weekend in Sacramento. No Central Valley Sports Report this Saturday, but Paul Menners will make his glorious return next Saturday, August 9th. And guess what? He'll be a guest on Thursday's show to talk about that and what his summer's been like. So that's what you got for us here. Grizzlies baseball on Sunday as well. Folks, that's it. Good show. Julia, great show. Ready to drive down to L.A.?
I'm ready.
All right. Next time you hear us, we'll be right after Giants baseball tomorrow, live from Rams camp. Can't wait to bring it to you. Until then, Giants baseball coming up next on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader.